Jack Johnson, the brunette in a blonde town, the Galveston giant, and the man with the golden smile, was the first black heavyweight champion of the world, and also the first black man allowed to fight for that title. While common sense would dictate that a boxer's greatest challenge is in the ring, that couldn't have been further from the truth in Johnson's life. Due to blinding racial fears and prejudice, he was denied his chance for years on end. Notably, undefeated champion Jim Jeffries retired from the ring in order to avoid the dangerous Johnson. The title, now vacant, was up for grabs in a match between Jack Root and Marvin Hart. Hart won the belt and held it briefly before losing it to Tommy Burns in a 20-round decision. Johnson deserved a shot at the title, but Burns refused and went on a worldwide tour in order to avoid him. Determined not to be denied his title shot, Johnson chased Burns from California to London to Paris, demanding a fight. Burns, hoping to avoid Johnson, made an outrageous demand of $30,000, the largest amount earned by a boxer to that point in time. Undeterred, Johnson said, "Take the fight," agreeing to receive just $5,000 as his share of the purse. And all of a sudden, Australian promoter Hugedale McIntosh had himself a heavyweight championship fight. The fight took place outside of Sydney, Australia on December 26, 1908 and was a mismatch as Johnson taunted and played with Burns for 14 rounds, giving him the beating of his life and taking the belt. Johnson now had his championship and sweet revenge. His win, however, was bittersweet. Instead of the victory ending the anger and acrimony towards him, it only set ablaze more hatred and inflamed the white boxing world into searching for a great white hope. Finally, former champion Jim Jeffries was persuaded into coming out of retirement to beat Johnson and restore the natural order of white supremacy. The fight was dubbed the Fight of the Century and took place on July 4, 1910 in front of 22,000 fans in Reno, Nevada. The public's emotions were high and hot, and there were death threats aimed at Johnson. As a precaution, McIntosh posted armed guards at all the entrances to prevent men from bringing guns into the arena. The fight lasted 15 rounds, with Johnson mugging to the crowd, battering Jeffries at will, and never himself being hit. It was a virtuoso demonstration of Johnson's elegant ring mastery and unparalleled defensive skills. Jeffries had no answer. After the fight, a humble Jeffries said of Johnson, "I could never have whipped him in my best. I couldn't have hit him. No, I couldn't have reached him in 1,000 years. Johnson's purse was $117,000, and there were race riots all across the country. Outside the ring, Johnson was a fast liver and a lover of the sporting life. He insisted on living his life however he chose, with whomever he chose to live it with. He didn't allow anyone or any social conventions from keeping him from enjoying his pleasures. He loved racing fast cars, gambling, playing the viola, reading Shakespeare, and the company of white women. As you can imagine, what got Jack in the most trouble wasn't Shakespeare or the viola, but his affinity for white women. This infuriated much of middle-class black America, who, according to the New York Age, a newspaper serving the black community, called for him to be more modest. Modesty, however, wasn't enough for much of white America, who wanted to see Jack punished. In this, they were successful, as he was charged, prosecuted, and convicted of violating the Mann Act for traveling across state lines with his white girlfriend. The trial lasted less than 2 hours, and Johnson was found guilty and sentenced to a year and a day in prison. Released on $800 bond, Jack was shadowed night and day by the police, making sure he didn't jump bail. However, ever clever Jack wasn't ready for prison, and he devised a plan to flee the country. He convinced his good friend Rook Foster, pitcher and manager of the traveling black baseball team Foster's Giants, to lend him a uniform, give him some bags to carry, and let him board a train with the team heading out on a Northeast barnstorming tour. With his cap pulled down low on his head, Johnson boarded the train unnoticed by the police. Jack eventually made his way to Europe, where he boxed in exhibitions, performed in vaudeville shows, and fought bulls in Spain. After seeing the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, The Great White Hope, Muhammad Ali said, "That's my story." You take out the issue of white women and replace it with the issue of religion. That's my story. Eventually, growing tired of being on the run in Europe and missing his family, Jack took his first steps towards returning home by agreeing to fight Jess Willard in Cuba. Jack lost the fight in a lackluster performance, which he later said he threw, and returned to the United States in 1920, turning himself in and serving his sentence. Johnson, who started his career fighting in battle royales for coins thrown into the ring, rose to be the heavyweight champion of the world, earning $117,000 in his 1910 fight with Jim Jeffries. He held the title from 1908 through 1915, at the time the longest reign in heavyweight championship history, and he is considered to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, offensive boxers of all time. Reflecting on his life, Jack was quoted as saying, "Don't let your dreams be dreams," and "I have found no better way of avoiding race prejudice than to act with people of other races as if prejudice didn't exist." Jack Johnson, the Galveston Giant, the man with the golden smile, died in a car accident in Raleigh, North Carolina, June 10, 1946, at 68 years of age. Rest in peace, Jack.